We're heading into the 70s, which means a lot of things, Joe. What do you think? Bad music, heavy drug use, rape in film, a lot of nudity, and a lot of bush.
Now it's garbage.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the show. We're Just Another Movie Night. I am Scott.
And I'm Joe.
And today we are talking trash.
Talking trash.
Talking trash indeed. This is our show to spoil, debate, crap on, and give second chances to the hated, the lowest rated, and the much debated and often forgotten flicks of the internet. All while asking the question, is this the worst movie ever made? And if not, I said nade. The worst movie ever nade.
You haven't even been drinking. Get your life together, okay? Or I'm gonna have to take over this shit.
Oh, all while asking the question, is this the worst movie ever made? And if not, what is? Because here on the show, we believe that you need to know what the worst movie is if you truly want to review films. And today, we are doing something special for the month. What are we doing?
Okay, so for this month, we're celebrating the career of Roger Corman. He just celebrated his 98th birthday, which is amazing. And he has 944 credits on IMDb. That's 944. 492 as producer, 56 as director, 45 as actor, and 10 as writer. Lots of people got their start with Roger Corman. He's definitely started out a lot of people in the movie business. And one of those people is Ron Howard, who is quoted as saying that one day Roger Corman said to him when we were testing titles for Eat My Dust, there was another title that came in a very close second, Grand Theft Auto. If you can fashion a car crash comedy about young people on the run, I'd let you direct that picture. So my dad and I cooked up a story within 24 hours. It was the fastest green light I've ever gotten to this day. I never did direct for him again, but I did cast him in Apollo 13. We love him. We all do. That's Ron Howard on Roger Corman. So now we're entering the 1970s with a film that Roger Corman produced and secretly co-directed. And this one's called Death Sport. Death Sport. 1978.
Yes, this is the this is what happens when you sign David Carradine for a five-picture deal and you've got to give him some movies to do. This was a really interesting film.
Okay, well, there are only five other humans that know about this. I have banned David Carradine films in this house. I have banned them. Okay, only our Bad Movie Night group understands this situation. But unfortunately, since we're doing Roger Corman films, I couldn't ban anything because we're doing Roger Corman films. So this is the first and last time since I declared that David Carradine is not allowed in this house.
I mean, he's going to show up accidentally many, many times. It's always going to happen.
Not if I have something to do with it.
Well, in 2005, David Carradine said about Roger Corman and this movie in particular, he said, I was advised not to do this film. Roger Corman specifically asked, he said to him, you shouldn't do this movie. And he said, he was right too. I knew at the moment I saw the picture. He warned me and I didn't listen. He was determined not to pay anybody except me. He didn't want to put any money into this movie. He paid me what I was worth back then. And that was pretty much the whole budget of the movie right there.
Oh my God.
Yeah, this movie is... The things behind the scenes are more interesting than the movie itself. This movie is a huge disaster. It cost $140,000. I almost had $140 million, which is hilarious. This is Roger Corman month, for God's sakes. It's impossible to have that much money.
$140,000?
Yeah.
That all that money went to the explosions in this film.
Yeah, well, according to Carradine, most of it went to him. So,
wow.
He was on a huge success. You know, he had done Kung Fu. The television show was popular. He had walked away from that. He was doing some movies that were pretty big. That's wild to me that David Carradine was ever an actor that was a leading man.
That's shocking.
It's shocking because every movie we've ever watched with him has been this quality.
Yeah, it has. That's why he's banned in this house.
Where he is pretty much just sleepwalking through it, and he is high as hell. Now, this movie actually has a link to last week's episode, accidentally. Not something that we were planning whatsoever. But we mentioned last episode about LSD and how Richard Lynch, who in a previous episode we did, we discussed how he had apparently taken LSD and set himself on fire. Mm-hmm. Another link is that David Carradine was very open about how much LSD he had done. In an interview, he actually said, probably 1,000 times.
How many acid trips have you done, LSD trips?
I have no idea.
In the hundreds, I believe, isn't it?
1,000.
Wow, 1,000. And you still appear to be compass medis, and you can remember certainly that you never starred in Angel with a Limp. so presumably you're fairly lucky to have survived all that, I would have thought.
That's probably true. I am lucky that way, but I'm lucky a lot of ways.
Do you regret any of it, or was it all kind of part of the journey? Was it useful?
Regret? I kind of try to stay away from that whole thing.
Jesus. So we got two people, and now everybody on the set of this movie was loaded out of their minds. This movie was a disaster. And after watching it, I can see all of it.
Oh my God. I mean, they all had to be on crazy drugs. The only people I would see that's not on crazy drugs were the people driving the motorcycles, the stunt people.
I mean, you couldn't even see their faces. And the people who were doing the stunts probably had to be high to do these stunts.
Oh, God. I mean, it's dangerous as it is. I mean, they were flying around cliffs and doing all sorts of stuff. It was crazy. But
Yeah, I mean, this is a crazy one. Charles B. Griffith, who we have talked about in the previous episodes, he, a lifelong Roger Corman collaborator, was asked to do the script for this, which was supposed to be the sequel to Death Race 2000. Oh. And it kind of got morphed, and Roger Corman didn't like the script, and they just kept rewriting it and kept changing it. It's the same thing with the directors. Virtually director after director came onto this movie and was getting either fired or didn't come back because they all had problems, to the point where Roger Corman had to secretly direct, but so did David Carradine. So this movie is insane. I would ask you a question right now if you knew any of the things or the names or the plot of this film, but
I could tell you whose name I do remember, and that's David Carradine's. His name was Kaz O'Shea. Because they literally say it 9,000 times in this movie, but I also said that if I was like a vigilante, I would want my name to be Kaz O'Shea, because that's just a badass name. It's really a badass name.
Yeah, it's a good one. Well, this movie, when we were seeing the 70s, last week we were guessing at the end of our episode, before watching this film, what a 70s movie is going to have, and especially a Roger Corman 70s film. You know you're going to get certain things.
Yes, but what did you tell me that you can guarantee I won't have in this one because it's post-apocalyptic?
I said, well, in our mark of bad movie quality, that's a different thing. I said, we have a list of things that you know you're watching a bad movie if you see these things. And the first one was opening long credit scenes.
Yes.
With nothing happening. Just credits, boring-ass credits that go on too long. This movie has that. And then I joked, well, I doubt we all have turtlenecks, which is another staple of bad movies, when you see a bunch of turtlenecks. And unfortunately, I said, well, there's only one chance. What if they have like a futuristic outfit and they only have a turtleneck on the top? Like, which could happen.
Every 70s movie has to have that terrible fashion. 70s fashion is puke worthy, and turtlenecks are... it's like the Crocs of the 70s, okay? I hate Crocs. Hate them. I don't give a shit if they're comfortable. I hate them, and I hate turtlenecks. So these two articles of clothing, I was like so stoked. I was like, oh, good. There's not going to be any corduroy or any turtlenecks in this film. I was wrong.
Yeah. We actually got turtlenecks. And the reason is What I guess I would need to point out is the poster for this movie is extremely, you know, like false advertising. Like, I thought it was automatically going to be Mad Max.
Yeah, it's like a hot chick or something.
No, it's like a guy in like a bondage gear outfit.
Oh.
Like, he looks like he's riding into Mad Max.
Okay, yeah, he does. Yes, he does.
None of that is in this film. Yeah. In fact, this is a future where there's still society enough to have turtlenecks and people making, you know, using science. And then there's a whole bunch of people who are dressed like they're in a barbarian film. Which is so odd, because David Carradine, who is not in particular any kind of good shape, ever. No. He's never been. You know, he's always just looked like an old man.
He right? really has,
He always
though.
Has looked like this old guy, like this older guy that you would, like, you know, go up to the gas station and see that one creepy guy works there and stares at you really, like, oddly.
Mm-hmm.
That's David Carradine to me. Like, I never understood this. He's wearing only a loincloth in this film.
That's it.
Yeah, and sometimes they wear a cape that has a giant headpiece over their eyes.
Yeah, he's got like a cloak.
And it's like fur. It's like, well, the one girl has like a Dalmatian fur around her head.
And they're in the desert. It's literally 3,000 degrees outside.
Yeah, it's not even, I wouldn't even say it's desert. It's just like...
Well, it looks pretty arid.
Yeah,
pretty
it's just mountainous land.
Pretty, yeah. It looks like the desert.
Well, I mean, David, just imagining David Carradine shirtless, constantly in just a loincloth, I don't know. It's not appealing. And his shots get right up in there, too, and it's not the most pleasant thing to look at. But this is supposed to be, and I got to give it, I guess I got to do the narration here. Okay, because I have the narration here, and this is pretty much explains the entire film.
Do it.
So,
1,000 years from tomorrow. After the great neutron wars, the world consists of desert wastes and isolated cityscapes. A few machines remain as a reminder of the past, but only the city-dwelling statemen use them. Between the cities roam dreaded cannibal mutants and the range guides. Guides are legendary warriors leading an independent nomadic life, owing allegiance only to their code.
And that's this movie. That literally is the whole movie wrapped up in one statement. This is 1,000 years from tomorrow, just so you know.
Yes, and so several times during this movie they refer to the motorcycles as death machines.
Yes, so everything in this movie has a name. That's just like, it's this thing that when they say it out loud and they use it in every sentence, it just sounds so bizarre. So they'll say death machines.
Yes, but they're not, I mean, they have a better name though. Do you know what the better name is? Destructocycles.
I don't remember that saying being, was that said in this film?
No, but that's what they're saying on IMDb, a destructocycle.
I don't recall anything like that.
They never once say that. They call it death machines throughout the whole movie. Just silliness.
Yeah, I don't remember that at all. And the whole movie revolves around how the city, basically, which is just a matte painting, a really, really bad matte painting. The whole city is ruled by this one guy, and that guy throws anybody who they see as criminals into a game called the Death Sport.
Yeah, it's death sport.
That's it. It's so plain. There's no name for it. It's just like,
so
oh, death sport.
Pulling people into this game, and they have to survive it, basically.
Yeah, I mean, you would think that since that's the name of the title, that would be the movie. It
no.
really doesn't matter. It doesn't matter whatsoever. It's just that this cranky old man who's in charge, by the way, a very big mistake on their part for not getting Cameron Mitchell.
Okay, this movie definitely could have used Cameron Mitchell.
Oh, it could have used Cameron Mitchell.
All right, close the fucking doors. Will you close the fucking doors? Close that fucking door!
And Robert Zadar, I think.
I'm okay with that because I think Richard Lynch rocks. I think he might be the best thing about this whole film, besides
really,
the explosions.
He's really cool doing Diabolical. We've seen him. He's a bad movie night all-star. He's been in a lot of movies that we have seen.
Yeah, previously on our episode of Mission USA.
No, is it? No, Invasion.
Oh my God, I keep wanting to call it Mission USA. You know why? Because Chuck Norris is in, is he in Mission something? No, maybe not. I don't know why I keep calling it that.
I'm sure Chuck Norris is in a movie that has Mission in the title, okay?
I know he's got, like, Missing in Action, Delta Force. I don't know. I really don't know.
I'll bet you
but
he
for
does.
On... odd reasons, we call it Mission USA by accident. I think I do it all the time.
And I was calling it Action USA for a long time, and you kept correcting me. It is called Invasion USA.
Which yes. is like not even real.
And he's like always the bad guy.
Yeah, he's always the bad guy. Kind of great at it. He's just got that look, and he's given dialogue that's next level in this. And I would love... if you would read dialogue with me.
Sure, let's read dialogue. You got something for me? Where are we going? Where's the script?
I'm going to send you some script.
Okay, let's do it. What, can I be him? Or do I have to be the girl? I don't want to be the girl.
There's no girl. I only have funny quotes from him.
Okay, let's do it. Let's do it.
What's his name? Seed O'Shea?
No, Kaz O'Shea, and that is David Carradine.
Is it Kaz? Because the script I have here does not say Kaz. It says Seed O'Shea.
Oh, no, no. His name is Kaz O'Shea. They say it 3,000 times in the movie. But Richard Lynch is Ankar Moore.
I'm going to read for David Carradine, which is the second part.
Okay. Kaz O'Shea, I knew your mother.
Yes, she gave you your disgrace. Ankar Moore, you who betrayed the consciousness. Your dishonor is legend.
My dishonor is your fantasy. What is real, Kaz O'Shea, is now I can return to you a better gift than your mother gave to me. Your death in the death sport.
I just love everything this guy says in this film. Every time he talks, I love it. He reads it like it's Shakespearean.
Yeah, it kind of does.
He gives it so much, gravitas than it deserves.
Yeah. And he kind of does. He's got those like diabolical look to him.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
He delivers things, you know, like, I don't know. If there's some bad news coming your way, I wouldn't mind, you know, like if he delivers bad news, I think he would deliver bad news in like a good way.
Yeah.
I like him, even though he's supposed to be a bad guy. He was much better to watch on screen than David Carradine.
Oh, absolutely. That's what I was saying. He steals this movie. Like, every time he speaks.
Yeah. He's the best in this. But, seriously? He says, "Taste my blade." That's Kaz O'Shea. "Taste my blade."
That's a quote from David Carradine.
Yeah, that's Kaz O'Shea.
Here's another one. You want another one?
Yes.
"I'm only going to be man." Okay.
Oh, wow, that's a lot. Okay. Okay. "Never, never speak to me like that again. If you value what's left of your miserable life, I'll go after Kaz O'Shea and the others because it pleases me, and I will see them destroyed because I am Ankar Moore. We will go back to Helix City. We will go back triumphant with the body of Kaz O'Shea. The people saw him escape from the death sport. But I will show them that no man escapes my justice."
"Why risk our life for that? Let's go back and tell them that we killed him. Who's gonna know the difference?"
"I will. Helix City will have a new lord and protector when I return with the body of Kaz O'Shea."
I mean, it's so crazy that this dialogue is in this film.
I love it.
It's so nuts because every time Richard Lynch speaks in this film, he does these big, big, crazy villain things. And he says these lines. And the rest of the movie is just David Carradine, like, very blindly saying things like this.
"Your death will be your salute to me.
Yours will be mine. When you remember the code and fight me, useless animal."
Okay, I don't mean to speak ill of the dead, but he just was terrible. Okay, like in all these movies that we've seen, and there are many, that's why I've outlawed him. We have seen many, many Carradine movies, and yeah, they're so bad. And he's just not, he has no charisma at all in any of them. So he's not, it's like he's just sleeping through the whole movie. Every single one.
Yeah.
Like sand in the wind, keep moving.
By the way, I would say that everybody in this movie has now passed away, which is a shame, except for Roger Corman. Like,
it's, God bless him.
I know, it's so wild. Like, everybody has passed away now. Yeah, it's hard to talk about when the movie's so bland and our lead is so bland. It doesn't really matter. But I think that the real failure of this film in particular is the sound.
Ugh.
This is a movie that should be shown to people about what sound editing and sound mixing mean to a film. This should be shown as what not to do, because this movie wants to be Star Wars in the worst way possible. It uses constant sound effects stolen from this movie, right? From Star Wars.
Oh yeah, name them.
So every time a door opens in this film, it's Darth Vader's breathing.
I'm doing it so wrong.
Every time a motorcycle moves, it's two things. Well, three things. It's a mix of jet fighters going by, that sound effect that Roadrunner makes when he speeds off. And it is a TIE fighter from the Star Wars films, or any of the fighter jets in the Star Wars movies going off. Constantly.
Yep.
We caught other sound effects too. We were like, what the? Oh my God, what is that? One time I actually caught a sound effect that sounds like it's from The Thing, which is later. And I don't know if in The Thing they used it as a joke. I have no idea.
That was 82.
Yeah. So that was a little wild. I was going to point it out to you. Like, wait a minute, that sound is a little familiar to me. But yeah, this movie has, you have to hear it when motorcycles go off, and that's the whole film. Motorcycles are constantly moving in this movie. It's just horrifying noises going by. And it's like 25 times in a row.
It's so bad. Like, at one point, I think I told you, please, can you turn the sound on? Like, can you mute it? I actually said mute it, because it was so, it was continuous, just continuous.
I think I was a little worried that we were going to miss Richard Lynch saying anything.
I know, I didn't want to miss it either, but...
Yeah, let's shit on the plot a little bit. Let's try if we can talk this out, because I don't think we can. We kind of ran through it, what the plot is, but it is a weird-ass movie filled with weird-ass decisions of all kinds. The movie starts off with that narration that we did a little bit ago as a joke, and it just jumps into David Carradine fighting people who are riding motorcycles from the future. They basically just have, they took cheap motorcycles and they stuck on like plastic or like paper mache, like surrounding of them that make them look futuristic. And everybody's like dressed like a terrible stormtrooper on these things.
Yeah, they're wearing silver suits.
It's like white, isn't it?
No, they were silver. Okay. But the funny thing about it is that we started out in the movie with David Carradine and he's just in a loincloth. And then you can see these bad guys, these like henchmen, and they're all in silver suits and futuristic looking helmets. So I'm like, hold on a second. Are we in the medieval times or are we in the future?
Yeah, I mean, they say going 1,000 years from tomorrow, which would be 2078 in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
For us, it's, you know, 3,000.
Yeah.
So, yeah, okay. And which the movie's telling us is 3,000.
It's so weird because the technology in the movie does not scream out, you know, that it's in the future.
Yeah, that whole idea of what people thought the future would be always makes me laugh, especially in the 60s and 70s.
Yeah.
Everybody's going to look like the Jetsons, you know, with the costumes and everything. Everybody's wearing collars up, big silver puffy shirts.
I don't know. Yeah. I mean, I can see myself dressing like Judy Jetson. She's cute.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I wouldn't mind that. I think everybody could pull that off. But not these outfits.
No.
No. In fact, Richard Lynch's character is dressed like the Dread Pirate Roberts.
Oh, my God.
And
He is. Well, he is. That's a quote from, or that's a character, sorry, from Princess Bride.
Yes.
Yes.
Shame that you don't know that, people. Shame.
I know.
So, tell them. David Carradine is fighting in a loincloth. He's on horseback. He has a sword. That's it. And the people who are chasing him are on motorcycles, and they're using, and I shit you not, their flash, the camera flashes.
Like a flash bulb.
A flash bulb in a what looks like in a box that you would like maybe rig up to see an eclipse. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just, it looks like a flash bulb in a box that they're holding, and they shoot people with that. And when the beam hits them, it makes them just completely disappear. Like they just completely erase them.
Yeah. From so that's how you know, like you're in the future. But yeah. Then David Carradine has a sword.
Just a sword. And he's kicking the shit out of these guys. And Richard Lynch is like watching, and he's like, don't attack. He keeps telling them, don't do what you're doing. You're idiots. Like they keep following him into like tight spaces. So he'll just keep killing them.
Yeah.
And they shoot his horse, and they were finally able, and he's like, of course, and this is a thing that villains constantly want to say, don't kill them, we need them alive. It's always a thing.
Yeah, but right? Why? I mean,
yeah.
I guess for the death sport.
Yeah, I mean, the whole plot of this movie really doesn't make much sense. Like, the ruler of the city, and I'm forgetting the city's name, but it's a funny-ass thing.
I kept calling it Tecrapolis. Because I had no, it looked like crap, and it's, I just made it up, obviously, but they didn't say the name of the city, did they?
Oh, Helix.
Helix. Well, the leader of Helix is Lord Zerpola.
Lord Zerpola.
Lord Zerpola.
Yeah, and apparently Lord Zerpola is his whole plot line. He's going to attack on another city-state named Tritana.
Oh, God.
Triton? I have no idea what the hell it is. And apparently he's going to steal their fuel because he's obsessed with this motorcycle, these motorcycles that he's building, that he's making everybody drive, and he's telling them that they're going to be so important, and he wants to trick the people into wanting them. And saying that they're the coolest. So they have the death sport to show off the motorcycles. And he sends Richard Lynch out to capture these. I think he's. Is he a statesman or a. I think they're statesmen. And they're range guides?
I have no idea.
It's so fucking crazy.
I don't know. But all I know is that Richard Lynch was like one of the leaders. Because he gets to wear a cool costume. I mean, it's not cool.
But. Yes. Okay. Yeah. David Carradine is a range guide. And they are like basically like nomads that go in, and they're independent. They go fight in the wastelands and they help people and they're all spiritual. And the statesmen all rule the cities. And so he's telling them capture states of the range guides, bring them back. We're going to throw them in the death sport and show the people that the range guides are going to be beat by our death cycles or whatever the hell it is. Right? And that's his plot line. That's what he does. And it just so happens that the guy they go after is like the bigwig of range guides. Because he is like a legendary swordsman of his mother, who's also legendary. And apparently, at one point in time, Richard Lynch's character was also a range guide. And he kind of like betrayed them and went to the city and became a statesman.
Mm-hmm.
And he worked his way up because he's like the right-hand guy who really kind of is ruling things.
I mean, he is kind of the leader.
Only because you find out that Lord Zerpola, whatever the hell his name is, Lord Zerpola is actually coming down with a disease. And I have to read this quote.
Yes, please.
Because this one's great. This is what the doctor actually says to this guy. The doctor sees Lord Zerpola and he tells him, I don't know what to call it. Its cause is probably related to a long-term radiation exposure. I've never seen anything like this before. I believe that you are losing control of your reasoning faculties. And then he says to him, and Lord Zerpola says back, you mean I'm going mad? So yeah, this doctor is telling this guy that he has radiation poisoning and it's making him have basically dementia. He's coming down.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's instantly throws this doctor into jail for spreading lies.
Yeah, spreading lies. There's nothing wrong with him, he says. Yeah. So he's like, you're spreading lies. I'm going to throw you into jail.
Yeah. And of course, at the same time, Richard Lynch has captured David Carradine and thrown him into a jail cell. And at the same time, Lord Zappola now tells Richard Lynch that he also wants a female range guide.
Used to capture a female guide without losing any more death machines.
I don't know why.
I don't understand why either.
Only because movie. Because they need boobies in this film.
Yes, lots of them.
So yeah, they go out and they find a herd of these people being led by a couple of range guides and one of their daughters. And they surround them and they basically take them all. And they kill the mother of the one little girl. And they take the leader of the range guides. And she is played by, what's her name again?
Claudia Jennings.
And she is thrown into a jail cell with them. And this...
It's very pretty.
Okay,
it's so... It's a tragic situation for that actress.
Oh, yeah.
She died very young.
Yeah, on the set of this movie, they were so high. Everybody was so messed up on the film that this woman actually had to be physically removed, this actress, from the set at certain points because she was so intoxicated and high on cocaine. They say that David Carradine was smoking so much weed on the set that it was unreal. Everybody was drunk. The directors were all fighting. Apparently, at one point, the director charged at this actress and physically assaulted her, which David Carradine apparently knocked him out and punched him and broke his nose, the director.
Oh, my God.
He had to be run to the hospital. He didn't want to work with David Carradine anymore. There's a whole bunch of stuff. I think that everybody did, the director and David Carradine, all did interviews with a magazine called Psychotronic or something like that. I've never heard of this magazine before, but they all have quotes from this set. The director, this movie's so crazy. And Roger Corman said at the end of the day, it's not enough nudity. So get that actress naked and make her walk around in a jelly factory with strung up lights. And then they just say, oh, they're electrocuting her.
Mm-hmm.
So we get a scene when they take all these people in these jail cells and they start torturing them. This actress has to walk around butt naked with these dangling lights that are apparently electrocuting her. And it makes no sense. I guess Lord Zola, I change his name every time.
Oh, Zappola. God. Zappola.
Lord Zappola loves electrocuting naked women. It's just a plot line that all of a sudden comes out of nowhere. And it's only because Roger Corman was like, I need more nudity. Go film another scene.
I mean, in Corman movies, there's a lot of nudity. There always is.
And so this poor actress has to walk around butt naked in this. They said they filmed it on a jelly factory. And they turned off the lights and they put strung up these lights that look like they're electrocuting her. And that's all they filmed. And they do it with another actress later on.
Mm-hmm. And you can tell it's the 70s because they don't landscape their stuff. So it was a little bit much, but...
Yeah. So apparently everything's nightmarish on the set. And we get odd scene after odd scene that kind of just comes together with these actors. It almost... If you told me that everybody was coming up with the dialogue on their own, I would believe it. You know? Because when they all kind of are in the jail cells, they talk to each other through the cell bars, which also electrocutes them. Apparently, David Carradine, when he bangs against the door so many times, he hurt his knee really bad on the set. They get electrocuted every time they get close. But apparently, the female and the female lead in him
mm-hmm.
share some kind of bond. Where at one point we thought they were talking with telekinesis,
like telepathy.
I thought they were sharing it with stuff with each other.
Like I thought that they had some kind of connection with their like their people or their their group that they could talk to each other, you know, telepathically. But that wasn't what was going on. I was like, oh, that would have been really cool, you know. But
it's not what's going on. Yeah, and they also know each other because he apparently was with their group once before, and also she knew his mother. And his mother apparently had certain kinds of powers that also he also has. I don't know if any of that actually comes into play.
We don't see how he has any powers.
I know. It's some kind of he says they come and go. I don't really understand.
We don't see anything.
Yeah, I don't know what that means to the plot at all.
It's bizarre.
It seems so strange. Something to do with attached like to nature or something like that, where they can predict certain things. I don't really know. But they know each other. And the doctor gets thrown in there with David Carradine. They decide to put him in the same cell. And they're like, let everybody in these cells fight in the death sport. And that, of course, they want them to fight in the death sport, but they also torture them a ton.
Yeah, they do. They whip them.
David Carradine gets whipped, and she gets put in that electrical room. And it's odd because the next scene, we thought maybe that was going to do something to her. But no, it doesn't really. She just shows up in the cell.
Yeah.
And she has healing abilities.
Okay. So this is a thing that she does have healing abilities that after David Carradine gets whipped, she heals him. She heals his wounds.
Yes.
Okay. This is mind-boggling. Okay. This woman, why isn't she treated like a queen? Why is she thrown into the death sport? I don't understand.
Because they won't succumb to the city. They won't go to the needs of like the city, you know, the government. So she's like outside of the government, and so she believes in free roaming and peace.
No, I get it, but like, I mean, she's very useful.
I agree.
Help people that are hurt, or what about the guy that's losing his marbles? I mean, can she repair his mind?
You would think that would come into play, but nothing about that comes into play whatsoever.
I mean, she heals David Carradine's wound once and then moves along with the plot. Like, we never hear of this again.
No. Yeah. It's so weird.
Like, that's a huge, amazing power. You're mystical.
Yeah.
You're not a human being.
And I would say that this probably gets knocked up to the all these different directors taking over. And also, the script, Roger Corman didn't like it, and they kept rewriting it.
Yeah, this movie was a hot mess. You can tell there's no rhyme or reason to any of it that was going on in this.
And, you know, they try to escape the whole thing. They every time they escape or try anything, they just go, we're just going to put them in death sport tomorrow. It's like, whatever. Instead of, like, killing them, they're worried about them actually making it out or doing something. They just keep leaving people alive. And the doctor who was thrown in there, he keeps saying that his son's going to come and save him. Like, I wish my son could come and save me. He does. He gets thrown in jail with them.
Yeah, I could not help but think that he looked like Prince Valium from Spaceballs.
But he's also dressed like the Dread Pirate Roberts.
He is. He's all black, too. Prince Valium hair from Spaceballs. Yes. And I was laughing at myself the whole time because I was like, oh, Lord, like, is this guy going to be somebody? Like, is he going to kick some ass or do something with this ridiculous hair that he's got in this ridiculous outfit?
What is he going to do with his hair?
No, nothing. He didn't do nothing.
Can you do something with your hair?
No, I mean,
make some badass whips with it.
Nothing with his hair. I mean, nothing with his hair, but like, he just looks so weird and goofy with that hair.
Well,
so,
I like the doctor as some kind of threat because he knows that the guy's sick, but was that all his plan anyways? Because his son seems like he was going to save him regardless before he even got thrown in jail. It's so odd. Like, how would he even got word? I don't know. I mean, I'm sure it's all there, but we probably couldn't even tell what the hell was going on half the time.
I'm sure it wasn't there. I'm sure it wasn't.
Yeah, it probably wasn't.
Things were just happening in this movie with no explanation or nothing.
Yeah, and they all talk like death sport. They all just say words that just do not fully make sense in a sentence. You know, the statesman, it's like, this was statement. You know, like, it's like, what that? You had to ask me three times, what the hell are they saying? I'm like, statesman. Like, that's the name of these characters. Like, it's so odd.
It seems a little too regal for these stupid goons, you know? I was like, this is just a little. The only thing I will say that didn't take me out of the movie, actually put me in, was not the boobs. That usually brings me back in. But.
Well, I'm guessing you're going to get into the next scene.
Yeah.
The death sport?
The death sport. Yeah.
Which I wouldn't say that death sport itself is good in any sense.
No, it's terrible.
And I wouldn't say that this is well directed in any sense.
No, even you picked out the bad edits,
bad cuts. Oh, it's insane how bad the edits are.
There's so many bad edits. I was like, oh, wow.
And this is one of those movies where, things like, you know, that joke of the Pinto, that you would tap it and it would explode, and some comedy movies have made jokes about that. That's the motorcycles, the death cycles, or whatever the hell they're called in this movie, that perform in the death sport.
Destructo cycles.
without losing any more death machines.
I love it. The Destructo cycles. One of them actually shows up with a sidecar, and it doesn't even play in this movie whatsoever.
No one's ever sitting in it.
Yeah,
I think that they got that at maybe a discount.
Yeah, probably. Well, what you were about to talk about, you can go ahead now. We fast forward into the death sport.
Yeah, it's, you know, what we're waiting for through the whole movie.
No, I mean, I don't even know what we're waiting for. I would say that we're waiting for Richard Lynch to fight David Carradine through the whole movie. Yeah. And we only get it in, like, the last 5 minutes.
Yeah. Well, the death sport is, I'm not going to lie. Okay, I was pretty invested. I had, like, that poo face on through the whole movie because I was just like, what the hell is this crap? But when the death sport actually happened and they're on their motorcycles and they're just destroying everything, I'm not gonna lie, those explosions were absolutely gorgeous. I was so excited. Last time I saw explosions like that were like noteworthy, I think we were talking about it in Invasion USA. Remember those explosions when they blew up the houses and stuff? And I was like, wow, that's a pretty good explosion.
I think we were more shocked in that movie, more not the explosions themselves, but the fact that they were able to do so much in that film. But I feel like that movie in particular was very lackluster. It should have been better. They had like city blocks to blow up, and they were like, yeah. In this movie, they're going all out. I mean, they must have gotten in trouble. Because there's like explosion after explosion after explosion in this film, in these moments.
It doesn't stop. Like the explosions during the death sport with the motorcycles blowing up and the dummies, like, you know, the dummies on the motorcycles on fire and people literally on fire running out of the explosions. And I just thought it was beautiful. Yeah. It was beautiful. I think, I don't know how, I don't know anything about like pyrotechnics or how they do these kind of things. But they had the explosions cascading everywhere. So it was like flaming hot embers, like all over the ground. And it just looked so beautiful. And I was in shock because I know that this movie doesn't have a budget. And fact that they literally blew up, I would say there must have been no less than 8 or 9 huge explosions in this movie. And every single explosion was better than the last explosion. Like, they just kept going one above. And they were just absolutely breathtaking. I just couldn't believe it. Because I'm like, okay, I'm watching this movie, and these explosions are in this movie? It was just crazy. Like, they must have had some kind of amazing, like, you know, pyrotechnic team or whatever.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, they were pretty good. And there's one scene in this movie where I thought someone was really on fire, like someone really got hurt.
Yeah, it does look like it a lot.
Yeah, and there's nothing in the trivia about it or in the goofs or, you know, whatever on IMDb, but it looked like this guy was literally, his whole face like caught on fire and he was trying to put himself out, and then he jumped off camera, like out of the scene to put himself out.
Yeah,
I couldn't stop staring. I was like, oh my God. Like, I think he really did get hurt. And I'm surprised with these explosions. They did have stunt drivers on these motorcycles. And I know that they were using dummies, but some of it looked amazing. Like when they were driving through the flames on the motorcycles.
Yeah.
I was baffled. I was like, wait, this is happening in a Roger Corman film? It was just too epic. It was beautiful. And that's what I have to say about the explosions.
Yeah, this is so funny because the producer, I believe he was on the set on talking about the movie, and he did, like I said, all these people did interviews and they're all insane. But I believe his name is Alan Arkush. I hope I'm not mispronouncing, but whatever. He was called in to complete the film and recut the movie and added new scenes. And he said, he later claimed that mostly we just blew up motorcycles, lots of them. We also set some mutants on fire, and the stunning Claudia Jennings got naked. Carradine smoked a lot of high-grade weed and helped us blow the stuff up. Sad to say, it couldn't save the picture. So, wow. I mean, and they said there's so many great quotes about this movie saying that Carradine actually said that the director refused to do the action scenes because it was making the explosions were making him have flashbacks to the Vietnam War that he was in. Wow. And he said that's nonsense and that Carradine was all high. But apparently Carradine was helping do these explosions. So I
that's what you want. You want a high David Carradine fucking around with dynamite and C4. Okay.
It's so nuts. Like I love these quotes as on the movie. It's so crazy that they said that the script was so ambitious. They were talking about that, like they had so many ideas in the script, but they had such a terrible time trying to shoot the movie. They actually said shooting was problematic. Said it had become hell from the third day of shooting. The script was too ambitious, the shooting schedule too tight, and the crew and the cast were largely sodden with drugs.
Oh my God.
These are all quotes. It's like, you kind of see it, and the explosions are amazing, but you're like, how many people got hurt? And I cannot believe we don't know.
That's what I was wondering. Yeah. Like, I mean, there's no way that these people, someone didn't get hurt. There's no way.
It's one of those things, too, where it seems like the motorcycle is being driven into a place that's like a small location, and then the explosion happens. So it either has to be edited in a way where it looks like it, but the editing is so sloppy that I'm shocked. Yeah. It seems like, no, they just blew it up. And I kept worrying, like, where is the guy? You know? And sometimes when the guys ran out on fire, like, holy shit. We saw one in particular later on. There's one where these cannibals, we actually finally get to see them after an hour of the film. Mm-hmm. And one of them, they're wearing like those fish nets that are made out of like a flammable material. And we just kept staring at it going, oh, any moment they're going to walk into that fire and set themselves on fire. Mm-hmm. And one character does get on fire and he quickly runs past the other. And we saw that the other one set out on fire. And I'm like, that couldn't have been. And they're in a tight location. They look like they're in a cave.
Yeah.
So they actually show one of the guys running down the cave. And he hits the floor. That's when they usually shoot the extinguishers on him and put him out. And I was like, you kind of see it. But you're like, holy crap. They were really tempting fate with these with these burns.
Yeah, I feel like they really did. A lot of people got hurt.
I must have. And if everybody was high and drunk, I'm sure it wasn't hurting until the next days where everybody was just so messed up.
Oh, yeah.
And all I keep reading is somebody was messed up or someone was hurt or someone was doing something crazy. They had to pull the actress off a motorcycle because she was so high out of her mind.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's wild.
It's crazy because, like, if they're saying that all the crew and the actors were high during this, like, okay, who is doing these explosions? Because you're having people on drugs doing these explosions.
Have you ever heard your actor was doing the explosions with them? Like, have you ever heard that? I've never heard that on a set before. The actor is setting off explosions. Like, that's next level.
It's crazy. The only thing I did read that was weird was the fact that the director asked David Carradine to direct the sex scene that he had with Claudia Jennings.
Yeah, so I was going to get to that later, yeah.
Because he had not had sex in months, 6 months.
That is a crazy quote, yeah.
He could not look at a naked woman, so he made...
He was afraid to get aroused, apparently.
That's nuts. I mean, yeah.
He asked David Carradine to film a sex scene, which, by the way, there really isn't any.
No, it's not. No. It's just a little bit of smooching. There's nothing. You see a nip.
Yeah.
There's nothing.
It's crazy.
But yeah.
Getting back to the story, what do you think happens? David Carradine and, I can't remember. What are the characters' names?
I think her name is Dieter.
This is the part of Sprockets While We Dance? Is that what it is?
I'm sorry. No, it's Denier.
Okay. I like Dieter better.
That was close.
We're going to call her Dieter.
I like Dieter.
All right. So Dieter and Kaz. Dieter and Kaz, of course, win the death sport. They kill all the motorcycle guys. They all blow up. They're killing everybody. And also the doctor and his son survive. And they're able to escape, which is just madness that they're able to get away.
Okay, but the rule is, and I heard this earlier on, is that when if you win the death sport, you're a free person. You can leave. You don't have to stay in this necropolis or whatever.
Yeah, but this is also like a dictatorship in the sense that the Lord Zapan, or whatever the hell his name is, he's just throwing the doctor into jail just because he said that you're sick. So, I mean, the fact that they're, this is the Running Man, right? And in the Running Man, they're like, oh, they won. They went to Hawaii, but they're really dead.
Yes.
It's like they wouldn't let these people all get away.
Right.
They get away. And that's where you find out that the Lord guy is actually very sick and he can't remember half his lines. And he threatens Richard Lynch's character. And Richard Lynch grabs him by the neck and gives him one of his great speeches about don't you ever. I think that's one that you already read.
Yeah.
He gives that speech to him like, I only do this because I feel like I want to, you know, mm-hmm. because it pleases me. So he goes after them on with the death cycles and they chase them on horseback and everything. And we just get more and more of these fights with the motorcycles, more fights with the explosions, more chases. It's shockingly boring. But when the explosions happen, you perk back up.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. Like, it literally took me back in. So, like, there would just be a bunch of vroom vrooming,
yeah.
which is literally all you get through the whole movie. And the sound effects are dreadful. It hurts your ears. It really does. And it's just terrible sound editing and terrible score, everything. And then when the explosions happen, it takes me back in. So then I get all pepped up again for 2 seconds, and I'm back out of it.
Yeah. And you know, what the plot is here is that David Carradine said that he would help her find that little girl if they were they helped work together to escape.
Yeah, there's a little girl that was taken in the beginning of the movie.
So they go on that little mission. They have sex. That's the whole thing. We don't know where the son and the doctor are during the sex stuff. But they
right
all,
next to them. Are you kidding me?
Yeah. During one of the battles, the doctor is killed and it leaves the three of them together. And they go into a cave to find the child. They figure out that child is there and was taken by the free-roaming mutants.
Okay, but cannibals mutants. With bulging eyeballs.
They have googly eyes.
It's pretty funny.
They dress in fish, like giant nets all on their bodies.
It's so weird. It was like, they just, I feel like the set production, you know, all the costume designers and stuff were like, all right, well, what do you put these gross guys in? You know, what do we put them in? What's in the back room there?
Anybody got any? What do we carry everything into the sets with? Oh, there's some nets and shit. Just throw them on.
Yeah, we brought the salmon in on those nets over there, you know, for the craft service table. Why don't we just use those?
Oh, it looks like there's some potato sacks for dinner. Just throw them on those guys.
Recognize them? No, but they might be mutants.
And that's the mutants, and they have her perfectly in a cat cage.
Like, now what are they keeping this little girl for?
I guess dinner, but it's been days.
It's been at least a week.
Yeah, it has to. They had them in the cells. They had them drugged up. They whipped them. They had the death sport. I mean, then they had to escape and find them. It couldn't have been a couple days. It had to be like a week.
I mean, it had to have been.
So apparently they've just been saving her for food. Who knows? But they kill all the mutants. They save the little girl. And, of course, Richard Lynch catches up to them. They have a final battle. They stop them. And it basically saves Richard Lynch. Richard Lynch gets the phone call that the Lord guy has died while trying to zap a stripper in one of his zapper rooms. And she reaches out for his hand. And he takes it. And she pulls him into the zap room and gives him a heart attack.
That was pretty epic. I mean, I was like, all right, maybe this girl's going to kick some ass or something. Who is she? We don't even know who she is.
We don't know anything about it.
No.
Nothing.
She was just a girl that they hired to be full frontal naked.
Yeah, and dance.
And dance around, and that was it. And so, I guess Lord Zeppeli or whatever his name is, he's dead. So now Richard Lynch is like, wahoo, it's me. I'm the leader now.
Yeah, and he says he can only bring... The only way he can go back to the base is with their dead bodies. And this way, when he brings them, that he can show the people of the city that he is taking and killing those people who defeated the death sport.
Mm-hmm.
So he's like, I'll bring them back and everybody will see it. And all the guards are like, I don't know if I want to. And he kills one of them. And then they're like, okay, well, we're with you now. And so he decides, which I like, this is one of the rare times in a movie. All those guys, all the henchmen get killed, except for one guy.
Mm-hmm.
And the Richard Lynch character goes, just go back to the Helix. Go back to the city. You shouldn't stay with me anymore because I'm destined to probably die now. Like, I can't give up. I have to go and fight him.
He said, we're defeated.
We're defeated. Yeah. He actually admits it, which I've never seen a villain do. Like, usually the villain's like, no, till the last moment, we got to kill these
for
guys.
For sure.
And he's like, you know what? Go back. Save yourself. Yep. You're damned with me. And I was like, oh, that's kind of neat, actually.
Yeah, but then who's going to run the city of Tecropolis?
Yeah, who knows? I don't know. I mean, maybe it's the woman that killed him in the stripper room. Who knows?
A.K.A. Helix. The kingdom or something?
Helix. Yeah, I don't know. There's another city, too, but...
I just call it Tecropolis.
Well, I was asking you what happened to the doctor, or the doctor's son. Did he go back to the city to
help rule? Go back to the city, yeah.
So maybe he's trying to rule it.
I mean, he's... useless, that guy.
Well, they all split up. David Carradine says, I have to go and fight him on my own. He does an entire last battle, blowing up bases of stuff with them.
It's epic.
And it leaves Richard Lynch and him to finally have a sword fight.
A duel, sir! Out on the range!
Which is kind of lame. It's literally the worst sword fight I've ever seen on screen.
At one point, Richard Lynch jumps so high in the sky... and lands on him. I was like, holy shit, how'd he do that? He can fly. Well, doesn't matter, because David Carradine just slices a whole bunch of times at the screen, and we just see Richard Lynch's head go flying off.
Yeah, it all happens off screen. There's no real gore. There's really nothing. And Richard Lynch is donezo.
Yeah, David Carradine's got a couple little funny slashes, just like blood spewing on his chest. And it just so happens that the girl... shows up, Dieter shows up with the little girl on horses, and they go, hey, they gave us horses. And he's like, why are you here? And she's like, because you and me are supposed to be together. And he's like, huh. He's like, you don't want to be with me? He's like, I do. Okay, we're married. Same. We have a kid. Let's go ride off into the sunset.
Yep.
And that's the movie.
That's the movie. So, like, it ends on, like, a happy note, of course. They killed the bad guys. And I guess there's going to be no more death sport because everyone's dead. So that game is over.
Yeah, because the guy wants to rule, take over another kingdom to get their fuel so he can ride more motorcycles around. I don't understand that guy's plot.
Like, I don't get it either. Because honestly, if you're going to ride, you're not even going to stay in the city. So what are you going to do? You're going to go live in a like a cave, like a... you know,
ooh, David Carradine?
Yeah, where is he going?
Yeah, they live on the land. They're nomads.
That's what I'm saying. This is like, okay, he's in his loincloth and she's in her like little cloak and her little tiny bra thing that she was wearing. And then the city is like the future. So there's two separate worlds here. I'm like, I don't know, man. I'd stay in that city. There's no bad people there anymore. You know, like it'd probably be nice there. Why would you go burn out in the desert?
I mean, I think you're missing the point. The city is bad.
Not anymore.
The government is bad.
Yes, but the ruler's dead. Dr. Zeppeli.
Yeah, but there's always going to be someone in power that wants money.
I guess you're right. I mean, at least there's beds there. You can just sleep on the freaking rocks.
I think I'm going to chill out with the nomads.
Eh.
And have, like...
smoke some peyote.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah.
Yeah, it sounded great. Sounds like, let's go back to last week's movie.
And trip out and under trip the stars. Out, man. Yeah. Oh my God.
Stars look bright tonight.
This one was different. I don't know. I mean, you know what? I'm sorry. Let me take that back. Okay. It was not different. I guess it was different for Corman, but.
Not really. This is pretty much all the 70 films. These are all cut and paste.
Just the premise, I guess. But like, I don't know. It didn't give me the vibes that it should have given me. Like, it could have been... he could have added... this is rated R. He could have added some more gore. He could have made it, like, amazing. Because he already had really cool explosions and stuff. And it was kind of like a battle royale type situation. They could have done something more with this. But it was very lame.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think that's the thing that's crazy. The only reason this is rated R is that Roger Corman was like, we got to get some boobs in this movie.
Yes, you know, but get, that's like
get
a
get some
staple.
People back, put boobs in there, and like get it more rated R. I don't understand why. There is blood. There's a lot of stabbing, and like it looks terrible is the problem. And there are insane explosions with people burning alive and stuff like that. but not enough to warrant an R. This easily could have escaped with the PG if they wanted to. I'm guessing the draw, though, is to get the naked stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not even pleasant. It's, you know, whatever. It's fine.
No.
But it's not anything like, holy shit, like, this is a sex scene or...
we're not talking about, like, how crazy, like, Deathstalker with the TNA in that movie.
Oh, that's next level.
That's next level.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's... This movie was...
Well, that question always is this the worst movie ever made? And we're going to say no, of course.
No. But I am giving this movie a 2. I'm giving it a 2 only because of the badass explosions.
Yeah.
Otherwise, there's nothing happening in this movie. This is a Corman movie that you can skip if you're going through his resume, which will take you about, I don't know, 15 years.
I don't know that. You could spend one whole year and get it done.
Yeah, but... I think maybe a year it'll take you. If you watch
you said 900 credits?
Yeah.
And some of that is it like himself and stuff like that. So there's probably about 300 that he maybe produced. How many did he produce when you said that in the opening?
He produced Well, first of all, he did 492 as a producer.
Oh,
but
wow.
But then
okay.
He did 45 as an actor. So,
Two years.
We're saying whole resume. That means even the ones as an actor. So he did 45 as an actor.
Okay. So, yeah, about 2 years, you would have to watch one a day.
Yeah.
To get his movies done. I would think that sounds like could be torture.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, the problem with Corman is that he's pushing out, like, movies for a certain audience. And he's trying to make the buck. He's trying to get a turnover.
Mm-hmm.
This movie wasn't successful. It made $400,000, apparently.
Yeah, but the budget was only $140,000.
Yeah, and you know how that goes, though. It usually, the cost has to be high. I think in the last 2 weeks, we saw that there were successes, the last two movies we watched.
Yeah.
And they were successes in the sense that they cost absolutely nothing, and they made huge profit. So, I actually have been blown away from the last two movies and how they made money. But it really goes to show you how he knows how to make a buck real quick.
Yeah.
You know, so, and he can use one person on a set, make them go to another set right after and film a whole bunch of stuff, get them out, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, this one was and he even knew it. He knew this wasn't going to be a success. He knew it was going to be a disaster, but he was hoping to push some stuff in there. And the explosions and the boobs are definitely for that. I feel weird giving it a 2, but I think I'll agree with you. I felt like it was almost a 3. I definitely think that Richard Lynch deserves a little credit. Every time he's on screen, there are a couple shots where I don't think he's high, especially after his past. I don't know if he is, but there's a shot where he's reading and he is really blitzed in the shot. He just seems like he is high out of his mind in one scene. But the rest of the movie, he is really giving it. Like, he's bringing the dialogue up. Like, he's making it better than it should be.
I mean, I think he should have been the lead instead of
if
Carradine.
He was that could have been interesting.
Yeah, I think he should have. Because, I mean, Carradine, he was not a good actor. He's just not.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's a fine actor. He's able to deliver dialogue. But he just, I don't know if he was leading man worthy.
No. Absolutely not.
He could have been like, he's always like that guy. Like when they were like casting Raiden in Mortal Kombat, he would have made sense. You know what I mean? That kind of guy.
Yeah.
Where he's like the wise man that shows up and says the, you know, tells the people the things. You know, the exposition dump character.
Yeah.
He would have been perfect for that. But in this movie, in seeing him, when they show him shirtless fighting, it always makes me laugh, especially when I think around this time, you've got Conan.
Yeah.
You know, you got like Arnold Schwarzenegger, Sylvester Stallone, ripped actors like doing these big budget like action films. And then you see David Carradine, you're like, holy shit.
Yeah.
How is this ever a thing?
I don't understand the appeal. I don't get it. But, you know, whatever. He's banned in this house. I mean, I can't take it.
I think
it
it's only because he has such a huge resume of bad movies.
Yeah.
He's got so many movies that he, on a talk show, he was asked, like as a game, they asked him a whole bunch of movie titles and they snuck in fake ones and they said, which ones of these were you in? And he got them all right. But just the fact that you could do that to him, name a whole bunch of movies and he was like, were you in this film? Were you in this film? I think that's funny as shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he's in that many movies.
So you're going with a 2 on this?
I'm going to go with you. I'm going to go with a 2 as well. This is not a good movie. I feel like it's a little better than a 2, but since we don't do the points, we just go right for a score. I would say that, yeah.
Okay.
This has some stuff in it that is like, oh, that's interesting. But when you really look at the full-length movie, it's like, holy shit.
Yeah. The movie as a whole.
Get out of there, yeah.
Yeah, I wanted it to be over. But, I mean, yeah, we're going to skip our segment of why we can't have nice things this week simply because there's only one 10-star review, and it's some a-hole, you know, writing something terrible.
It's why we can't have nice things, though, perfectly said, because
this person
is using a 10-score review to make a joke that's extremely...
It's offensive.
Offensive about the actors being passed away and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's disrespectful. But and the 1-star reviews, I'm not going to do it this week just because of the 10-star review. But next week I'm looking forward to our 1980s movie, which is my favorite decade, and also it is my favorite year for movies, 1985.
Okay, that's interesting.
Yep.
I also think this is funny because we're going to the 80s Roger Corman, so we pretty much guarantee the plot line will be around sex trafficking of some sort.
Well,
or the women of the night.
Well, you know the name of the movie, right?
I can't remember. What is it?
Okay, so the name of the movie is Streetwalkin'.
Perfect. See, I knew it.
We are going to get some TNA heavy,
yep.
And we are going to get a silly plot, and it's going to be...
I hope it's not like a heavy, depressing film. I hope it's like a badass woman gets revenge on somebody kind of movie.
I have a feeling it's going to be a prostitute with a heart of gold revenge
on
her.
Okay, that part I want to
hear. Angry pimp. Let's go with that.
I hope that's true. I really do.
let's do it. I really hope so.
So yeah. That's this week. We're going to get out of here. Thanks for listening. Have a good one. And hit us on social media, guys, if you want to mention any of this crap to us that you like David Carradine. Tell us. I want to hear it.
I don't. Blow it out your ass.
Don't hit us on social media.
I'm kidding. No, please. Please. Let us know. Let us know what your favorite David Carradine movie is. I really want to know. And don't say Kill Bill. Come on.
It's great. It's great.
Don't say Kill Bill. You have to say anything else but Kill Bill, because that's just what everyone's going to say, obviously.
All right. Well, I'm at Just Another Movie Night on Instagram, and Joe is at The Crafty Misfit on Instagram. You can hit us up there and tell Joe the Kill Bill movies.
Bleh.
All right. Thanks, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.
I'm Alan Arkush. Now, they say that movies are like dreams, that they take over our mind and they make us believe in alternate reality. Well, sometimes these dreams are nightmares. And I used to have a recurring nightmare in the late 70s. And it went something like this. I'm standing in an alien landscape, and there's a dome city off in the distance. But it's not really an alien landscape. It's Vasquez Rocks off Route 14 in the Antelope Valley, and the Dome City is a Jack Rabin matte painting. Anyway, mutants, deadly, frightening mutants, are scurrying around the rocks ready to attack me, but they're not really mutants. They're production assistants wearing camouflage netting, and they've really got ping pong balls for eyes. I don't know whose idea that was. And there's egg white coming out of their mouths with Alka-Seltzer to make them look scary. But anyway, the mutants run because there's a loud sound as if the whole earth is shaking, and coming towards us are death machines, huge futuristic motorcycles that are actually street Yamahas with big cowlings on the front that made them impossible to do stunts with or drive, and stuntmen would fall all over the place, and they had a death ray that came out the front that was a flashbulb. But anyway, astride these choppers are the samurai warriors, the scouts, and they're wearing helmets, gold helmets that made their heads look like Tootsie Roll Pops. Anyway, the lead scout takes off her helmet, and it's Claudia Jennings, Playmate of the Year. So the dream's getting better. And next to her is the lead samurai scout, and he's got a samurai sword that's made out of clear plastic, and it's way too big, and when you swing the sword, it falls out of the handle. So all the sword fights have to be done really slow. We speeded up the action. Anyway, the samurai is David Carradine, and it's not a dream. It really happened to me. I was called in to save this movie.
You are condemned to death, Spot.